companies and prices at the end of the day have to be underpinned by earnings, right? And if you simply break it down, there are only two components of stock price. One is earnings and second is the multiple you put on it.
We have to believe a few things, right? Like if you are investing in the market to... So on the market cap to GDP, we are at a premium. On price multiples, we are at a premium. However, the earnings growth itself has significant headroom to grow. And so if that continues, we have a likelihood of getting to... But do elections, Ashish, do something to the economy itself, which propels the market? Like as an example, one theory that one hears is elections induce a lot of spends. And because there are lots of spends, it just creates a multiplier effect on the economy itself. And, you know, obviously that's good for corporate profits and so
I believe there's no free lunch.
Yeah.
Okay. So at the end of the day, money has to come from somewhere.
Yeah. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Open Dialogue. In today's topic, we discuss Nifty. Will it get to 25,000 by 2025? Joining me today is Ashish Gupta. Ashish is the Chief Investment Officer at Axis Mutual Fund. He is a very well-known face in the Indian capital markets. We will today split this conversation into three parts. The first is... on the demand side, which is how are Indian companies looking, how's India's macro looking. The second is the supply side, which is who are the investors, is there enough money to propel the growth of the stock market further. And third is external factors like what's happening to global markets and so on and so forth. So let's start. Ashish, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. Ashish, let's start with the just where Indian markets are and in the context of global markets, what's happened recently and you know where we stand today.
So I think the Indian markets are reflecting the strong macro we have. And in the previous episodes, we have discussed the strengths of the Indian macro, how the country's balance sheet reserves are looking really strong. The vulnerabilities that existed in the past are no longer evident now. How corporate India had deleveraged over the years. Our bank balance sheets are well placed to really invest in the growth opportunity that presents itself. And the other backdrop of this is how India is looking in the context of the global economy, right? Because the global economy is on a weak footing. What we spoke about in the previous episode that this year we started with the fact that US growth was supposed to come down and China was supposed to really propel growth, but really it's played out differently. US growth has been strong and China has really disappointed. But I think what is going to really weigh on global growth and the outlook for it is the fact that some of the China's challenges are not just cyclical.
Right.
And so while we have had this swap that maybe a pull back in Chinese growth to some extent has been offset by the better US outlook. But the fact is that US was more of a cyclical slowdown, right? China's challenges appear to be more structural. There are balance sheet issues, which I think you and Neelkanth have discussed more at length in the previous episode. So I think what that means is that global growth outlook is not just of a cyclical slowdown. And I think my view is both 2023-2024, aggregate global GDP growth will be 2% or lower. Right?
And that is good or bad or ugly or what?
Yeah, so it's not great news for India. Rarely has Indian GDP grown over 6% when global growth has been less than 2%. Right? And the headwinds are visible for India today as well. So if you look at our export data, right? Our exports ex of oil, right? Because in the past 12 months, oil exports have really taken off. The fact is, ex of oil, our exports today are lower than what they were in 2021-2022. Right. Exports on a year-on-year basis, YTD are down about 9-10%, right? So that is clearly a headwind to our growth. And so I don't think we can get our optimal growth when the global outlook isn't great. Having said that, India is one of the economies where the larger driver of economy is internal demand.
Right.
Really, in some senses, about 80% of demand is internally generated. Right. And this puts us in a relatively better position to most other economies, which will be more challenged in this environment, particularly emerging markets. So, yes, it's not great news for India. From absolute point of view, we will not hit our desired growth rates. But again, from a money flow point of view, where growth differentials matter as much as absolute level of growth, I think it still means that India is an attractive destination.
Understood. Great. Great. Thanks for that context setting, Ashish. Now, if you just get into a little bit of your CIO mind and you know, just help us understand how does one think about market levels? Like, what metrics should one look for, and you know, in simple ways, in simple manner?
Sure. So I think I personally believe that companies and prices at the end of the day have to be underpinned by earnings, right? And if you simply break it down, there are only two components of stock price. One is earnings, and second is the multiple you put on it.
Right.
The multiple you put on it.
Is basically the stock price to the earnings.
Yes. So a PE multiple in the common part.
And earnings is just to simplify it, earnings means, let's say, PAT.
Yes, or PAT or earning per share.
If you are looking at
stock price, you have earning per share into PE, that gives you your stock price.
Right.
Now, in my view, the multiple itself is determined by the earnings.
Okay.
Right? Because, and not just earnings in a static sense of view, but earnings over a period of time.
Right.
Right? For more financially inclined listeners, it's more your discounted cash flows.
Yeah.
Right? So, how you are discounting those earnings, so future earnings, and then the other external variable is the interest rate or the discount rate. Right. So, I believe that as long as earnings are going to come through, one is in a good, happy place.
Right? Yeah, and just on the previous comment, the PE is higher if the earnings is consistent and growing.
Yes.
Because then you are kind of discounting a larger cash flow.
Yes.
And hence, you know, you are, like, the price earning is also kind of another way to think about it, is that the earning is what you get this year.
Yes.
And the price is what you're paying it for holding it for many years. And so, in many ways, the price is the number of years you are willing to wait for the earning to come through.
Yes, and earning growth to come through.
Exactly.
Right? So the key thing one has to watch out for is, what is the earning growth expectation over the years, and how confident you are.
Right.
Because if you are more confident about it, you will project it for more number of years. Right. To kind of take a simple example, look at a commodity company versus a consumer company.
Right.
There are many reasons why they trade at varying multiples, but typically you'll find commodity companies trade at a lower multiple versus a consumer company which trades at a higher multiple.
Right.
And the
deltas can be quite, like, commodities are at 4-6, whereas consumer can be
80-100. 40-60, And the reason for that is, in commodity companies, you're not sure of the earnings.
Right.
There can be huge volatility. If the commodity prices are not favorable, the company can even incur losses for the period of time.
Yeah.
In consumer companies, you are more confident of a consistent period of demand. And typically, in some ways, you can think of it as like a bond. Right. So bond has a steady cash flow. This company has a steady stream of earnings. And if it's a good company which is trading at high multiple, then the market is expecting that this earnings will actually also grow over the period of time. And that's why the discounted value of those earnings is much larger than when you discount a volatile period. Now, for market levels, we kind of can simplify it further, right? So one way to do it is look at market earnings and market multiple, right? A PE multiple. But another way to do it, which I find useful and which is a very broad thumb rule, is look at market cap to GDP, right? Because GDP is total national income, right, and market cap is your aggregate all listed companies. Of course, these are not accurate measures. There are companies that are unlisted, etc. Yep. But I think for the, a very broad sense of analysis, I find it useful. And to look at market level, one should can simply look at market cap to GDP, right? Sure. So what one market is trading vis-a-vis other market. To give you some context, India is today trading at about a little over 100% of GDP,
right,
in terms of market capitalization. The historic average actually for India has been 75% to 80%.
So it's already at a premium.
It's a premium for market cap to GDP, right? Now, to complicate matters more for you, we have taken GDP as an approximation for earnings potential, right?
Right.
But company profits to GDP is also variable.
Variable, yes. Right?
And we have seen, I think the last peak was 2008, when we had seen corporate profits to GDP go up to about 6%. In 2003 or 2002, they were like 1.7% of GDP, right? And you would remember we had a very great return from the market from 2003 to 2008, and that was backed by corporate profitability, right? So corporate profitability grew from 1.7 to 6% of GDP. Of course, again, over the past decade, it's not been great. So I think the bottom, recent bottom, was about 2.2% of GDP as corporate profits. Last couple of years have been great in terms of corporate profitability. And now we have again actually moved up to about 4% of GDP in terms of corporate profits.
Right.
And again, the expectations are that this upward journey will continue and we'll probably move up to 6-7% of GDP, right? So I think this kind of gives us a bit of confidence that yes, you can live with a higher market cap to GDP because your corporate profitability to GDP ratio is also moving up, right?
And perhaps that why there is a, that's why there's a premium.
Yes, right. And for return expectations, therefore, you see, okay, what is your nominal GDP growth expected? On top of that, you overlay how you expect your corporate profitability to GDP to move. And so if we have a double-digit nominal GDP growth expectation and you overlay a improvement in corporate profitability and market gets comfortable that you get 19-20% earnings growth coming through for the next couple of years, and that's helped market state. So today market is somewhere around 19 times forward earnings.
Right. And so this, so on the market cap to GDP, we are at a premium over historical numbers. How about on these price multiples? Like, how does that look compared to
So price multiples is also a premium. So the historic average is about 16 times. But as I said, we don't need to necessarily worry about that because profitability is expected to improve, right? Of course, the risk is if this improvement does not come through, right? And I think both as a profit to GDP as well as nominal GDP growth, right? Because if you see the first quarter print, the nominal GDP growth had dropped to 8%.
Right.
While all of us really focus on real GDP growth in all media and all discussions, but really for corporate profitability, corporate top line, it is nominal GDP growth that matters, right?
So inflation actually is positive in some ways.
In some ways, to a certain degree. To an extent, inflation goes to a level where real rates become negative. Then there's a challenge. And what we spoke about earlier, that discount rate starts changing and the it has a impact on PE multiple. Right. But I think at the end of the day, when we are looking at corporate profitability, it is nominal GDP growth that is important for us.
Right. So again, just kind of coming back to the question of how we are positioned. And So if you have to get to 2025, a few things we have to believe a few things, right? Like if you are investing in the market so on the market cap to GDP, we are at a premium. On price multiples, we are at a premium. However, the earnings growth itself has significant headroom to grow. And so if that continues, we have a likelihood of getting
to. And again, sitting here today, 25 by 25 sounds outlandish. But if you break it down, you'll realize that on a CAGR basis, what you are looking for is...
30%, right? Yeah, it's not a lot.
So, and again, going back to my earlier thesis, so if I'm looking at a double-digit nominal GDP growth, then it's not at all ask. Right. So we need to kind of hit that double-digit nominal GDP growth, then we will get this earnings growth. Because if you look really for corporate sector in India, right, there are several things that are going in its favor, right? GDP is growing. B, we are seeing high degree of formalization in many industries, right? We are seeing in many industries, private companies take more market share. And also we are seeing consolidation across industries where the top few players continue to gather more and more share, right? Therefore, for market leaders to grow much faster than nominal GDP is really not outlandish. And most businesses have a certain degree of operating leverage as well. So if you get the nominal GDP growth, the companies you are invested in continue to gain market share, both from informal sector as well as from smaller players. You put the operating leverage, you will get your 19-20% earnings growth.
Right. Understood. Great. So, sounds like an optimistic note, yes. Ashish. So, what could go wrong?
I think we discussed that in the previous answer that we don't get that nominal GDP growth of double digits. Right.
And why would that happen? Like what? So if again, as an investor, if I'm thinking of this number, you made it very clear to me what I need to believe.
Yes.
Now the question is that if I have to believe that the GDP, nominal GDP will not grow at 10%, nominal GDP growing at double digit means, let's say inflation of 5%, it's a, let's say 6% real GDP growth.
Yes.
It's a number India has hit most years reasonably easily. So now, what could happen that that doesn't...
So one is really drag from the external sector.
Right.
Right. There can be drag from the external, from the manufacturer side, services exports, which is about 10% of GDP, right? So if they don't grow, you have impact through the economy of that. There is impact of commodity prices. If global growth is not good, there is commodity price deflation. So you may not actually get your 4-5% delta of inflation because of that. Of course, there is benefits of that.
In the bottom line,
and it kind of gives some degree of room for the central bank to be more accommodative and push for growth. Right? I think the other risk we run and we need to watch carefully is that we don't become complacent. I think the government has started on a journey of fiscal responsibility post-COVID. We need to continue on that journey. I think this year, your fiscal deficit is going to be over 5% of GDP. And next year, it's expected to be brought down. I think we need to ensure that we stay that course, despite it being an election year, despite the fact that oil prices have again gone up. So those are some of the challenges.
Sure. So basically, a major external event, like a big recession, could be one. Commodity prices going the other way could be another. And some internal, like our macro suddenly worsen or something of that nature could be a third.
And I think the risk from elections that I perceive is not of outcomes, but really what happens going into election, right? So we are seeing several states announcing measures which are not very fiscally prudent. I hope we don't get into a competitive scenario on that, because I think we need the fiscal responsibility. You would have seen today India is going to be part of the global bond indices. That will mean foreign ownership of the bond market will also increase over time. And I think a prerequisite of that is that we stay this responsible on the fiscal side.
Absolutely. So two follow-on questions. First is, you mentioned elections. And actually, I had a question on just what does elections do to the stock market? Historically, what have you seen happen? And is there something there for us to watch out for? And second, is this, again, the JP Morgan bond index, yeah, and, you know, India being part of that, what does that do to our Nifty 25 kind of outlook?
See, election or any other event, right, presents two sets of this. One is risk based on outcome. Any event is happening, say Brexit is happening or election is happening, if the market believes scenario A is good and scenario B is bad, then there's an event risk, right? If scenario A pans out or B pans out. In this case, given the opinion polls, etc., I don't think currently there's a perception of a risk in the market that a scenario that market is not comfortable will pan out, right? Of course, opinion polls can change and we will track them over the course of
currently
the next
10 months. There is a risk or there is little
risk? There is little risk.
There is little risk, right. Okay. Yeah.
But the other issue is that markets don't like uncertainty.
Right.
And to the degree that there's uncertainty leading into elections, whether because of certain state results coming opposite to what the general expectation is or opposite to the expectations of the general elections are, or as I mentioned, what people see is announcements being made that will make the fiscal weaker than where it should be. So I think those uncertainties are something that can play on the market.
Right. So likely a lot of volatility.
Yes.
But overall kind, yes, of may not. But do elections, Ashish, do something to the economy itself which propels the market? Like as an example, one theory that one hears is elections induce a lot of spends. And because there are lots of spends, it just creates a multiplier effect on the economy itself. And, yeah, you know, obviously that's good for corporate profits and so on.
I believe there's no free lunch.
Yeah.
Okay. So at the end of the day, money has to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
So one of the things we all have been very happy with on how the government capex has gone up in the last few years. In fact, that's now reached a stage that it is crowding in private sector capex as well.
Right.
Now, again, if we were to say that the government becomes profligate and now there is welfare spending that comes to the fore or subsidies goes up, it has to come either of the two ways. Either some of the spend that we have been positive or capex spends goes up or fiscal deficit goes up, right? And I would not want to make that choice.
Right, understood. Very helpful. Let's move a little bit to the supply side of this entire equation. So, which is for the markets to go up, there is obviously kind of companies have to do well, etc. But also there has to be enough money which is coming in and driving the markets. So, how is that, like how has that evolved over time and what do you see happening there?
So, I think over times it's interesting that India has become more and more prominent in the global ecosystem and the financial system, right? But conversely, particularly in the last few years, it's not been the foreign investors that's been driving the Indian market, right? Both on the debt side and the equity side. I recall about 5-6 years ago, foreign investors owned about 5% of the Indian bond market, sovereign bond market. Their holding is now less than 1%.
Right.
So we have seen similar trends even in the equity market. Both 2021 and 22, foreign investors were net sellers in India.
Yep.
This year, we have seen foreign investors again coming back, but we saw outflows in the Jan to March quarter. We saw inflows for 4 months. Again, we saw a month of outflows. But in aggregate, we have seen about $15 billion of inflows this year, right? Given India's global contribution to growth and overall GDP, I think we should expect $20-25 billion of inflows to be kind of steady state for India. However, what has dramatically changed in the last 5 years is global interest rates or cost of capital has changed. And that's why while India's contribution to global GDP growth has gone up, but share of global flows has actually come down. The biggest supplier of funds actually has been the domestic market. Domestic retail investor, you would have seen household savings in equities have gone up. It's gone up, its share has gone up to almost 5%. We at our AMC continue to see consistent flows. I think what I also find is that domestic investors have moved from investing into equity markets to allocating to equity markets.
Right.
Because for the last 2 years, the net amount of inflows you have seen in the Indian equity mutual fund, more than 80% has come from the SIPs.
Right.
You would have seen the just announced number for even the month of August. There was almost $1.9 billion of SIPs that that came in. And I think when people are investing through SIPs, they are really investing more for the medium to long term. They are actually allocating more to equity than they have traditionally done.
Right.
And these flows we find a lot more sticky as well.
Right. And it is quite extraordinary, right? So $1.9 billion approximately so annualized is $24
billion. Yes.
And that is approximately equal to what you're expecting all foreign investors to bring in into the country.
Yes.
And historically, this number would have been very skewed, I presume.
Yes. And I think what it means is that this is a number that that will grow and continue. So it's not a volatile number, right? When people make lump sum investment, they put money when they believe, okay, next 3 months, 6 months, outlook is good, or last 6 months, return has been good. And when there's a bad patch in the market, they will kind of take the money out. I think with really the predominance of SIPs, I believe mis-selling of mutual funds in the industry has come down.
Right.
I think the regulator has done a great service by moving all distributor commissions to a trail model, right? Because no one is just interested in selling the fund. They want the AUM of their investors to grow, right? And so they encourage them to do SIP. They invest over the period of time. So depending on whether the market is at a high or a low, it really does not impact return. Because typically the challenge for retail investors is that people get attracted to the stock market when really the returns have been superlative. And that's not necessarily, from an IRR point of view, the best time to invest in the market.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
But if you stagger your investment over the period of time, the entry point becomes less relevant.
Right. Great. So then to summarize, Ashish, from a demand side, we may be a little bit premium to historical levels, but the earnings growth is yet to fully come through. And so that premium seems quite justified, and hence optimistic from a 12-13% CAGR may not be that tough to achieve. On the supply side, there seems to be steady inflow of money, and particularly with the retail investor coming in, there is a more stable and a significant stream of kind of supply coming into the market. And obviously, foreign investors, I guess, will look at opportunities and come in, go out, but it doesn't look like there is major risk there as well.
And I think there also, on the fact is that if we continue to deliver a premium in terms of growth over to most of the markets, investors will come, right? And I think, global rates are higher, but probably they have peaked or are close to peak. So at least the negative delta in terms of rates is not there. People's cost of capital has been reset. And so if we continue to deliver on growth, and as I mentioned, our growth dynamics are much better compared to most of the world today, we should get our fair share of foreign investor funds. Having said this, let me also highlight one other aspect, right? I think till now we have been talking very broad level macro on the valuation side, that market is 19, 20 times, it's slightly higher than history, one standard deviation higher, but actually averages also hide a lot of stuff, yep. Right? And so today there are a little over 450 companies in India which have more than $1 billion of market cap, right? And one third of them trade at a P of 50 or over.
Right.
So when you kind of sit down and say, okay, which companies I want to buy and what is the P of my investable universe where I'm confident of growth, I'm confident on the quality of management, on the ROE, ROC, etc., then the multiples are actually much more elevated than the average multiple for the market.
Right.
So I think it becomes really important from a return perspective that these companies deliver the growth numbers that you are expecting,
right?
Because the multiples are not the average 19 times what you are paying for the market.
Right. Understood. And so again, just kind of to close, optimism on the demand supply side, obviously macros can only say so much. There's lots of micro factors. Also risk factors could be a slowdown in our nominal GDP growth, which could be driven by some external recession. It could be driven by some internal factors as well. So those are the ones to watch out for. But if these things pan out, then maybe things could look quite good. Great. Thanks a lot, Ashish, for that conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
I did, certainly. Thank you.
Thank you for listening into this episode of Open Dialogue. I hope you enjoyed this as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. We are overwhelmed by the response that we've received and really look forward to your comments and feedback. Do like and subscribe to our channel to keep track of new episodes that are coming through. Thank you.